Part 10, Chapter 6. A light shone down from the present edge and confirmed it. The fissure, 30 feet back from the old edge, had simply opened in the earthquake and fallen into the gorge. The cliff face was no longer overhanging, but sloped up toward them. In the light, the wide edge of the broken-off quartz lode was visible. It was pure white, no gold in the remaining vein. The pocket of gold was gone. But Johnny was thinking right now of the crew. They had not reached the fissure, for the avalanche had exposed no tunnel. They were somehow trapped under them, if they were still alive. Johnny raced back to the shaft edge. It yawned blackly, a large circle of emptiness, silent. The shaft was about 100 feet deep. He looked around, flashing his light.
The hoist! Where is the hoist?
The entire apparatus used to take out ore and lower and raise men was missing. Lights played down the mountain. It was not on the slope. Johnny approached the hole more closely. Then he saw the slide marks of the cross timbers that had supported the hoist cage over the hole. The hoist was down there in the shaft.
Be very quiet, everyone, said Johnny.
Then he bent over and cupped his hands and shouted down,
Down there! Is anyone alive?
They listened.
I thought I heard something,
said the parson, who had come along. Johnny tried again. They listened. They could not be sure. Johnny turned on his belt radio and spoke into it. No answer. He saw Angus in the rescue team.
Angus! Drop an intercom on a cable down into that hole!
While Angus and two others were doing that, Johnny pulled a picto recorder out of the rescue gear. He found more cable and extended its leads. Angus had rigged and lowered the intercom. Johnny signaled to the parson. The place was broadly lit now, with lamps the relief crew had put on poles. The parson's hand was shaking as he held the intercom mic.
Hello, the mine?
Said the parson. The intercom mic down there should pick up voices if there was any reply. There wasn't.
Keep trying,
said Johnny. He paid out the line of the picto recorder and lowered it into the hole. Robert the Fox stepped forward from the relief group and took charge of the portable screen. At first, there was just the shaft wall sliding by as the picto recorder went down. Then a piece of timber. Then a tangle of cable. Then the hoist. Johnny rotated the cable and shifted the remote control to wide angle. The hoist was empty. A sigh of relief joined the night wind as the tense group saw that no one had been killed in the hoist. Johnny worked the remote to look over the hoist. It was hard to tell, but it did not appear there was anybody crushed under the fallen hoist. The picto recorder swung idly on its cable, 90 feet below them. Eyes strained at the view screen, begging it for data.
No drift hole! The drift hole isn't visible! When the hoist fell, it caved in the entrance to the drift down there.
Pressing a flying platform into service, they flew a 3-man crew down to the bottom of the drift. Robert the Fox wouldn't let Johnny go down on it. One of the men dropped down from the platform and fixed lifting hooks into the cage cable, and they pulled it back up to the top of the hole. They rigged a crane, pulleys, and a winch, and 33 minutes later, clocked by the historian, who also had sneaked aboard the relief plane. They had the hoist out of the shaft and sitting off to the side. Johnny put the picto recorder back down, and it confirmed his guess. The shaft end of the level drift down there was blocked, knocked shut when the hoist fell. They rigged buckets to crane cable, and very shortly they had 4 men down at the bottom. Johnny ignored Robert and went this time. They tore at the rocks with their hands, filling up buckets that shot aloft to be replaced by empty ones. More tools and welcome sledges came down. 2 hours went by. They changed 3 of the men twice. Johnny stayed down there. They worked in a blur of speed. The rattle of rocks and thud of sledges freeing them resounded in the dusty hole bottom. The rock fall was thicker than they had hoped. 2 feet into the drift. 3 feet. 4 feet. 5 feet. Maybe the whole drift had collapsed. They changed crews. Johnny stayed down there. 3 hours and 16 minutes after their arrival at the bottom, Johnny heard a distant whisper of sound. He held up his hand for silence.
In the mine!
He shouted. Very faintly, it came back.
Air hole!
Repeat!
Shouted Johnny. It came back.
Make!
Johnny grabbed a long mine drill. He looked for the thinnest place he could imagine in the white rock wall before him, socked the rock drill point into it, and signaled the man on the drill motor.
Let her spin!
They bucked the drill into it with the pressure handles. The others would hear it in there and get out of the way. With a high scream, the drill went through. They dragged it out.
Air hose!
And they fed the hose through the drill hole and turned the air compressor on. Air from the drift squealed back past the sides of the hose and into the rescue crew's faces. 21 minutes later, they had the top of the rock fall cleared and could drag men out. They had to drop the gap farther to get the last one. It was Dunaldin, and he had a broken ankle and broken ribs. 17 men, only one with a serious injury. They passed them to the top silently in the hoist buckets. A dust and sweat-covered Johnny was the last one up. The parson threw a blanket around him. The salvaged crew were bundled up, sitting in the snow, most of them drinking something hot that one of the old women had sent in a huge jug. The parson had finished setting the ankle of Dunaldin and, helped by Robert the Fox, was taping up the ribs. Finally, Thor said,
"We lost the load."
Nobody said anything.